Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Knife Talk podcast. My name is Marek Malmasi. I am here with Jeff Vader of Vader Knives and Mr. Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. We are here to answer your questions, keep you company on your commute or in the shop, and generally just try to help the time pass and have a good time. We like to do a little check-in about the past week, and so we'll kick off with that. Craig, what's been up, man?
Nothing much. I've been left here in the UK until Saturday morning. I head back Saturday morning. So I've just been rehearsing all week, like ear blisteringly loud as well, particularly today, very, very loud. Ready for a big show that we've got tomorrow. So after the show, I drive straight to London after the show, sleep in the car.
Oh, God.
I know. And then I've got like a 5 a.m. flight. So, yeah. Sucks, but at least I'll be home then. I can't wait. It's been 2 weeks. I haven't really been with my wife. So she's been... I took the kids to Center Parks with my sister so my wife could work because they were off school. And then as soon as we got back, they all flew back to France. So I haven't seen the kids for a week, and I've seen my wife for 2 weeks. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting home. Yeah.
Good. Dang. What? Are you the opening act, or are you the headliner?
We're supporting. So... Okay. I don't know if... Do you know the Fun Loving Criminals? They're an American band. They were quite big in the 90s. They were Huey Morgan's... No? Okay.
Marekko was born in the 90s. How could he possibly know?
True.
In 84.
I know.
It's very... You guys are going the other direction. Marekko's just a baby.
It's very New York, very... I thought you'd be into it, the two of you, actually. I thought that kind of music. Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, so we're supporting them. So we've got 40 minutes to change the world. So yeah, it'll be fun.
Interesting. Cool. Mm.
It's been busy, busy, busy. Busy, busy, busy over here in New York.
Busy bees.
It's
good.
Been great.
Oh, yeah.
This has been busy. This has been like, it's kind of the last 3 weeks have been much better. We're working on a project that we might do, and hopefully we're working out the kinks to possibly do something kind of different and interesting for us as a business. Not that different, just like an additional part of what we do, which would be, it's obviously too early to talk about, but I'm excited about it.
Is this the hands project on OnlyFans you're talking about?
No, you motherfucker.
You're missing out there. Yeah, missing out.
Yeah. You're on, like, what are you on? Only feet?
Only feet.
Tootsie picks. Tootsie picks from Craig. that's been good. Business has been good. We're about to fly out to my wife and I are going to go visit my in-laws. We're going to go to Wisconsin for the weekend, which is great. And you know, like I said, business has been great. The crazy part is it's no secret. I talk about the basketball all the time. The playoffs season has been unbelievable. The Knicks have been amazing, and it's been like every night. It's every night there's been a game. It's just been so exciting. And then they've just got to the second round of the playoffs against the former champions, the Boston Celtics. And they went to Boston and they beat Boston both games almost identical ways. Both games were almost identically the same. And they were not expected to win. They were expected to get swept. And it's like this New York and New York radio has been crazy. And it's just been really fun. And the funniest part is like just in terms of New York, that all you can talk about is the Knicks right now because it's just so much. It's with all the news in the world, it kind of is not the best. It's just like this nice way to kind of something to think about. But the funny part is they just announced who the new Pope is, and the thing about the Knicks are three of the players on the starting team are from Villanova, Well, it turns out the new Pope is from Villanova. It's college, and you know, went to college in Villanova, which is in down in Philly, a college in Philly. So now they're making this whole big connection between the Pope has, like, you know, like, inherently blessed the New York Knicks to win the whole fucking thing, which is hilarious. So yeah, it's just this, just been a really funny kind of, you know, positive, positive the 24 hours over here.
Good stuff. So. Good stuff. Nice. So you said business has taken a bit of a turnaround as well the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been like, I mean, I attribute it to, you know, really kind of nose to the grindstone and not, you know, it just being visible, but also making good connections with guys. And this collaboration I'm doing with Every Day's Feast Day has been really, really paying off in dividends. And it's been a really great opportunity. We're giving 10% of 10% of sales are going to this great charity called Sparrow's Nest, which is this company, is a Hudson Valley business that feeds families who are going through cancer. Bob, the guy that we work with, every time we do one of these collaborations, we always work. We just always, you know, say, hey, why don't you come up with, you have a charity, and we'll give 10% to the charity. So yeah, so so Bob's wife had gone through cancer, and he was really like, being, you know, if you're going through cancer, it's nice when somebody feeds you. So this company, you know, brings food to people with cancer. So we've been great. It's been really like one of the best collaborations, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're having a good time. Like Bob is fantastic, and his videos are very approachable, and you know, it's just like a really, really one of the really, really better collaborations we've done. And Parm to Table, my man Christian Petroni's book, our fork is on the cover of that, and that's really cool. It's just, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, long-term things that are starting to kind of pick up, which is nice. But it's not, nothing's overnight. Everything is this kind of one foot in front of the other, one day after the other, and, you know, just things are starting to happen, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. Nice. You're walking it into the shop. Nice.
Trying to fucking walk it into the shop, my man.
Yeah, yeah. Mareko, what's been going on?
What's been going on? Shit. I actually was forging today. It felt good to get in the get the forge turned on and do a little bit of forging.
It's been
a little while. I've been I kind of been working on a backlog of knives that have just like, these were knives that I forged like 4 or 5 years ago when I was doing a lot of pattern experimenting. And what I would do is I'd make this crazy pattern, and then I'd be like, well, I can see obviously the pattern in the end of the mosaic bar, but I want to see what it actually looks like in the form of a knife. And so then I would forge out a knife using the pattern and be like, cool, now I understand what it looks like and how it flows. And then I would set it down, because that whole time I've just been distracting myself and side questing, and then be like, fuck, I gotta set this down and get back to my actual job of making a knife for this custom order or whatever, or that custom order. And so I've had all these knives laying around, and so I've been slowly working through those. I got this great handle I'm getting ready to shape up. It's going to be like my ridgeline style handle, that's kind of a play on facets with contouring and stuff like that, and it's just fucking super comfortable. I'm going to try something a little bit different on this one. I'm sorry, if my voice is fading, it's because I keep turning my head and looking at the knife. And then otherwise, I've just kind of been, like, blades coming up. I'm dabbling with playing with the idea of actually getting to blade a little bit early, as well as maybe staying a little late afterward and trying to do some work with people. I actually just got off the phone with my buddy Lucas O'Hara, who's Grizzly Forge over on Instagram. Great dude, and I spent some time with him earlier this year, actually in January, teaching him chef's knife, like kind of design and hollow grinding for S grinds and compound grinds and all that kind of shit, and handle sculpting and faceted handles and shit like that. We got a lot of work done in a week, but so I'm probably gonna be doing some work with him, but yeah, like for blade show, I'm getting ready. I'm getting stuff because I have 3 classes I'm going to be teaching. I have one on Thursday, which is actually like table holder setup day. But the idea for the class is that it's going to be targeted to makers, so that makers don't have to leave their tables during the actual show and during actual potential sales to go take a class. And it's a material conservation class for the forging smith. So anybody working, whether it's monosteel or Damascus, just trying to maximize their materials so they're experiencing very little waste. And then the next one is deep dive into culinary knives. And so I'm basically, this one is going to be Friday morning, and it is going to be geared towards kind of more towards collectors as well as newer chef's knife makers to just better understand kind of the nuances of design and various grinds and their and the function of those different grinds and relationships from the blade to the handle and balance points and shit like that. And then the last one is demystifying Damascus, which is going to be Saturday morning. And that's where I'm going to be, again, kind of targeting collectors in helping them to better understand the work that really goes into some of these mosaic Damascus patterns, as well as other kind of more conventional patterns that you see, like random or Turkish twists and stuff like that. But also, again, for makers who are interested in better kind of better understanding the work that goes into making Damascus, who are kind of newer to Damascus making or haven't even started it with it yet, I'm also going to be taking laminated prints. So in my Patreon, every year I send something out to the patronage. And the last couple of years I've been sending prints to the patrons, which are kind of like my step-by-step process for making a pattern or forging progression and stuff like that. And so I'm going to have prints at the show actually this year. So that's going to be fun. I'm going to also have my Devil Skull knife. I don't know. I think that's basically it. I forgot to mention this, I think, last week. Well, actually, not last week, but the week before when I was on the show last.
Mareko?
Yeah.
Have you had lots of coffee?
No.
She's like, pew, 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 pew.
I'm trying not to let there be too much dead space.
Well, no, just don't.
Dead air.
Carry on.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry.
I did actually have a lot of espresso, though. I had the mocha pot, and I forget that it brews kind of like espresso strength coffee, and I just drink the whole fucking thing.
You know why I think you can tell? I think it's because you're on ear mics, because your microphone is like you're moving your head a lot, and your microphone is rubbing against your beard.
Really? Oh no, I wasn't. No, yeah. I didn't pick up on that. Actually,
That's why. No, I thought you were,
I didn't set up the right microphone. Fuck, I thought it was selected properly.
No, I think it's okay.
It sounds good, but that's why I thought, because you're moving around. It's all right.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry,
everybody, for my sound quality, if it's bothering you. I recorded with the Hustle and Grind guys. There's Noah and Ryan over at Hustle and Grind a couple weeks ago. We had a really great conversation. I meant to say that a couple weeks ago. And I want to give a shout out to our friend Ellen Durkin, she's the Iron Maiden Forge on Instagram, all one word. She made one of her Iron Maiden Forge pieces. What she does, like this, it's almost like negligee kind of stuff often, but it's like wearable sculpture. And she did a dress for Jenna Ortega, who played Wednesday Adams on the Netflix series Wednesday, for the Met Gala that was just like last week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Super fucking cool. So massive shout out to her for getting that kind of recognition for her work. Because her work is super good. I really enjoy it. It's cool.
That's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've been very busy. That's good to hear.
And hopped up on coffee.
Yes. News. Do we have news? I believe we have. Jeff, should we start with you?
I don't have any new news.
He did his news in his...
I mean, unless you want to go back. I mean, you're getting a lot of messages in regards to the gatekeeper talk, but I think we can save that for a little bit.
Gatekeeper talk.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I would say that the last four episodes where we've talked about art and AI, and I don't know if you listened to last episode, Mareko, but I was referred to as a gatekeeper in a few instances, and we talked about that. We got a lot of just messages in regards to the conversation about, the idea of what is gatekeeping and is, and all that stuff. But I mean, I don't have anything new, but there's some listener feedback we can hop into that'll kind of reignite that story. But I don't have any
Do you know what? Regarding the messages that we get, it's really nice that people are like informed messages, informed opinions are coming through, as opposed to having like a, I don't know, it's a YouTube video and they're just like comments we get every single idiot just commenting a load of shit. But generally, when we talk about something and people message us back, they know what they're talking about. And it's like it's a nice conversation to have. You know? It's,
yeah,
it seems to work well as a format like this.
We've been getting a lot of nice messages in regards to the kind of the conversations that we've been having, especially, you know, if we don't completely agree with each other, I think that it, and we handle it in a very respectful way.
Yeah.
I think it's been a really, really nice, fun, you know, instead of just straight up answering questions. When we started to do this, I was always hoping that the listeners' questions would spark a conversation. So anytime we have a discourse between the three of us where it's, you know, we're having a conversation, it's always kind of compelling.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, then, so I struck out with one. Mareko, do you have news?
No, I mean, Ellen Durkin.
Oh, fuck's sake, that's two now.
Well, I actually, you know what, the only news I have, it was sent in a full blast, but have you heard of the Delco Pooper?
No.
This is the only news I have that off the top of my head. This woman,
excited.
This is we're talking weird news, and I think that it was supposed to be waiting for when Ben Snort comes on. But we'll probably have to get out of this pretty quick. So this woman was being chased, then there was some road rage. The woman who was being chased, who knows for what, she stopped her car, got out of the car, went to the hood of the car that was following her, and evacuated completely on the hood of her car.
Whoa.
And they found her, and they arrested her. And the story is like, how do you do this? And she was referred to as the Delco Pooper.
Yes.
Because she's from, I guess Delco is a part of Philadelphia or Pennsylvania. It's like a kind of, I think it's like, I would imagine it's kind of a area or a redneck area. But the only news I know of is the Delco Pooper. And obviously, we're not going to talk about the Knicks anymore, which I love.
Oh, we're God, I think we're done with them.
Yeah.
We're done with them, you know?
However, I will say, and I can't, and I'll keep it very quick, I did send a knife to the private chef of one of the starting five of the New York Knicks. And that's all I can say right now. So one of the starting five of the New York Knicks' private chef is, by the time this airs, will be preparing the food for one of the starting five of the New York Knicks with one of my knives.
Knicks
fucking thrilled.
Knicks colors?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know it, baby. You know it, baby.
All right.
Nice. Okay, well, I do have some news then, because I thought we had lots of news, sorry. Not big news, but it'll be fun news. So I've been speaking with Dharma Steele, and Carly is coming on the show. So if anybody has any questions about Dharma Steele, the more technical, the better. I think that's what she said.
Oh, God. Find that. That's hilarious.
But yeah, so whether it's going to be next week or the week after, it's coming. So if you've got any questions regarding Dharma Steele, send them through, and we get Carly to answer.
She's actually a big basketball fan and huge NBA fan, so she's been messaging me. She's been watching the playoffs.
So it
might turn into, like, you know,
basketball talk.
Basketball talk. I don't think it will be.
No. I'm excited for the Timberwolves.
Me
and
too.
The Nuggets.
You know what? This playoff, the playoff season.
And those made-up teams, the Timberwolves and the Nuggets.
I mean, somebody has to come up with the names. But
go back to your rugby tugging your puds. You guys sit on the fucking
rugby tugging.
You're on the fucking field with all your big tough guys, and you're pulling on each other's puds. Don't worry about that. The NBA playoffs have been amazing because all the underdogs have been winning.
Yeah.
So it's
Go
exciting.
Nuggets.
Super exciting. I got a friend of mine. I got the guy from Tormek's been texting me. He's a huge basketball fan. And then a guy from Rockler, who's a Tormek distributor, has been like, he and I are we want to have the Timberwolves and the Knicks play because there's a big trade between. No one cares. The NBA playoffs
I watched,
have been amazing.
Yeah, I watched. It was the Timberwolves that knocked out the Lakers, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I watched the end of that game, and I was like, "Holy
fucking!"
Just like the last, I guess, minute and a half was pretty intense.
That team,
they
nobody wants to hear about it, but that was the big trade between the Knicks and the Timberwolves. Like, a couple of the Knicks went to the Timberwolves, a couple of the Timberwolves went to the Knicks. But it's been great. Basketball has been great. Yeah. So fuck LeBron James, respectfully. And I'm so sick of the Lakers. I couldn't be happier that the Timberwolves won. I want the Timberwolves and the Knicks in the finals. I've spoken.
Cool. Go Nuggets. Okay.
I love that you said fuck him respectfully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you start saying fuck you to somebody, you got to like throw in that like anchor of the parachute. You got to throw the second parachute, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't just fall straight to the ground.
I start with the gentle or the soft part first. So I tell people to gently go fuck themselves.
Nah, you know what? You know you just give them it's the slap and tickle. You got to give them the slap and then the tickle at the end. Don't worry.
Don't take this the wrong way, but you're a prick. It's just, there's no other way to take it, is there?
Listen, that's it, baby. I'm with you.
Okay, questions. We get them. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got questions, DM them to us. We particularly like audio questions. So in Instagram now, you can send audio messages to people. Send us your messages. Do we have any, Jeffrey?
We have one audio message. You want to save it?
Save it. Yeah, let's pepper in a bit later. Okay.
I got one, yeah.
Go on then. I'll take the first then from Dan McGrath. He says, I know a textbook heat treatment is important to get the most out of your particular steel, but does a perfect heat treatment affect the quality of your Damascus edging process?
I think he means etching.
Etching. I was going to say edge. Talking about his edging process.
Yeah, you and your tugging your putts. You rugby tuggers.
Right around the edge.
Yeah.
Would it affect the etching process? Marekko, I'd imagine this is a good one for you.
It does. So, as long as the blade is fully hardened, you should get a pretty even etch. Now, I will say, especially with integrals, because that bolster area is such a thicker cross section versus what the blade looks like. It's going to hold more heat, so it's going to cool down more slowly. And I've definitely had blades where the blade quenched properly, but the bolster didn't fully harden. Now, that doesn't affect the performance. If anything, it actually benefits the blade. But when it comes to etching the steel, it's going to, because the structure is different. So a hard blade is, you bring your whole blade up to critical temperature, it's in an austenitic form. And then you quench it, and it transforms that austenite into martensite. But if it doesn't quench fast enough, you get a mixture called perlite. Now, there's different ranges of perlite, but that perlite will etch differently. And actually, it looks like a hormone. And actually, when you create a hormone, that's kind of what you're playing with. By insulating portions of the blade while keeping other portions exposed, the insulated portions cool down slower, so it doesn't have the same structure as the exposed material. So you get this kind of cloudy, misty, kind of swoopy, whatever kind of effect, a differential hardening, hone, whatever you want to call it. That same thing will happen on your Damascus, and it will show up if you are doing a ferric etch. Now, a coffee etch will help to create a more even finish, but it's not going to hide it. And if you are capable of putting the blade back through a heat treating process, I honestly would suggest trying to do that, including potentially taking some of the mass off of the bolster. I usually don't do any sculpting, and I think that's kind of been my problem in the past, is that I don't do any sculpting or pre-shaping of the bolster before hardening, with the idea that I'll still do a little bit more sculpting just to kind of get through that decarb layer and whatnot around the bolster. And because there's all that kind of almost like a third of extra material, it holds a lot more heat. And so that is definitely something that can happen. But ultimately, if you get the blade transformed, if you're doing non-integrals, and you're doing a good job agitating the steel, you should be able to get the entire blade fully transformed from austenite to martensite, and it should etch pretty evenly, whether using gator etch or ferric or coffee or kind of a combination of various approaches. But if you do get a little bit of a difference in hardening, then I would double check just to make sure that it's not along the edge first off, because that's going to cause problems. But if you're fine with it, then I would suggest using a coffee etch to help get a more even aesthetic.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. Anything to add, Jeff?
I get asked all the time about etching and stuff like that. I mean, the coffee etch, it feels like it's the one, it just so much better for food safety, but it just seems like it's much more sturdy. Like it's a much more durable, non-toxic, operation. And it's just like every time it always looks so much better. And I just, I don't know why anybody wouldn't use it. So
sure.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
We do have breaking news, by the way.
Uh-oh.
Breaking news. Breaking news. Okay.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I'm like legitimately shocked. So this is breaking news sent from one of our listeners. I have to go back. I got CA glue on my fingers, so it's making the touching button, making the touching button not so nice.
The Amazon's not working.
All right, so our man Jay Fig, that's Dark State Forge. He just sent us something. I just put it on our stories, and it about the AI discussion. And it was really, it's kind of cool that he sent this in. We were talking about our listeners sending stuff in. So he wrote, not sure if this is actual numbers, but more fodder for the AI discussion, energy/resource consumption. Chat. And then this is from my friend just called me motherfucker. These Knicks guys. My phone is like crazy. So this site says I Want Second SPDX wrote ChatGPT uses so much energy that the U.S. is literally reversing course on coal and gas usage to make up for it. In Santa Clara, for example, the data centers use 60% of the entire city's electricity. ChatGPT uses 1 to 3 bottles of water for cooling for every query you put in. This is fresh water, which is evaporated and eventually mostly returns to the ocean, effectively removing it from our already dwindling fresh water supply on the planet. It also consumes 17,000 times more electricity than the average American home. The AI boom wastes so much electricity that we're very immediately risking U.S. cities having to have rolling blackouts just to keep up with the energy demands as of next year. Gen AI water usage is projected to hit 6.6 billion meters cubed by 2027.
Crazy.
So it's crazy, right?
Yep.
Not a huge surprise. My kid got real mad at me when we talked. She's like, don't use ChatGPT. Because it uses a lot of energy. I'm like, all right, Jesus Christ! I gotta read the guy to buy the newspaper to see what the box scores now. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, another reason to keep away from the devil. That's the way I think.
I guess so. I mean, it is. There is no free lunch. It's like you just even if you don't think it costs, everything has a cost. It's just like. It's like the Midas touch, It's like you give the gold, but you get everything's going to be gold,
The yin and the yang, yeah.
You're yin and the yang. That's what you do when you're playing rugby. You're all up in that yin and yang.
You're an idiot. Absolute idiot.
How dare you? You're right.
Who's going to take Dustin's question?
Dustin Sheffield says, much like Gold Star listener Bingo, I'm always trying to bring knife work into my day job. The whole joke is that Brigham Kendall has got a day job, and he has finagled his way into bringing his side hustle into the day job. So the motherfucker is like double dipping, and like he's the moonlighting extraordinaire. So Dustin Sheffield's trying to figure out how to fucking squeeze his boss. Talk about fucking pulling the putt of his boss. Easy when I was working as a blacksmith, I was thinking about bringing in some of my wood blanks to my current job and cooking them in an aggregate oven. Two questions come to mind. So basically he's thinking about trying to dry the wood out before he does a stabilizing. He's talking about stabilizing wood. Two questions come to mind before I go for the cactus juice. Cactus juice is the resin that people use for stabilizing. First off, when you're using an oven, you said the high temperature swings are high. Can you use something as a heat shield or a heat sink to help? For example, fire bricks above and below to help regulate the temperature. Secondly, have you all ever heard of drying to constant mass? That is to say, measuring weight while drying until you no longer see a large change from moisture loss. Oh, something I do in my day job when I'm drying rocks. Possible Knife Talk bit, tips for your day job.
Couple of questions here. Drying rocks as your day job? That's a
Dusty the rock dryer.
Yeah, he's winding us up, surely.
Yeah. Craig's pulling his putt. Dustin's drying his rocks.
Drying his rocks.
It's the same thing. Same thing.
What I would say is, if you want to dry wood in an oven, it's got to be slow. If you dry too quick, that's when it'll be uneven and you get warps and all the rest of it. So like when you get like kiln dried wood, it's generally really, really, you know, low temperatures over a longer period. But with regards to stabilizing the temperatures, fire bricks and that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, I use them in like even heats and things like that. Sometimes put extra bricks in if I need to do, you know, a little bit. That definitely works. It'll hold temperature and, you know, you won't get that blast and drop off of temperature quick because it's going to hold that energy. But yeah, using a big industrial oven, I would have thought it would be way too hot just for drying out wood.
Yeah.
If you're drying out rocks, I'd imagine it's a bit of a temperature to that. So I don't know.
I was just doing the conversion. Most conventional ovens in the United States, at least, the lowest they'll go is about 180 degrees Fahrenheit, which is roughly 80 degrees Celsius.
Mm.
And that seems like that might be too intense.
Seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the magic number. But that's the magic number. 200 is the magic number for cactus juice.
That's afterwards. That's for the uptake. That's afterwards.
Right?
Pardon me? Yeah, that's for the drying.
For the setting.
Yeah, for setting the juice. But he's talking about beforehand, drying out wood before it goes through that process.
I go 200 degrees in the even heat, and I've never burned it. I don't get warps and stuff. The wood is usually bigger, but I've always gone with 200 degrees because I figured that's what they use for setting. So if they're using it for setting, then it's probably the same.
Mm. I gotcha.
Well, actually, you know, the funny thing is I got a friend of mine who has a lumber yard down the way, and I went to his shop and he was showing me how they kiln dry a lot of their wood. Hmm. You know, you think that a lot of these guys who are kiln drying their wood have these industrial ovens. They don't. They have like a box they made out of plywood, and then they have a fucking space heater in there. It's almost that's what a lot of industrial guys who are smoking meats, they don't have like some fucking, you know, Boris Karloff giant machine. They have like a box and a fucking candle.
Bunsen burner.
Yeah, it's some bullshit. So you don't need a whole lot. I mean, just to dry something out. One of the things I've noticed by using the even heat too is like I'll have it go for a while and then sometimes I'll just turn the oven off and then the residual heat from the from the bricks holds in so much. And inside that oven, it is so goddamn dry that helps set. That helps take out a lot of the moisture out of the wood. But yeah. I use the even heat just because I used to use the oven tamers, those little, you know, I don't know, Arduinos or whatever the hell they're called. And they regulate your little toaster oven, but it's just like, I mean, that thing is madness. It's just like, it's like a ping pong ball going hot to cold. I mean, it's not steady.
Yeah, something to consider as well, if you are drying out, like particularly like scales, like thinner wood, that kind of stuff, if you're drying them out, whether you're using a kiln or whatever you're doing, once you bring them out, if there's moisture in the air, it'll want to suck it up immediately like a sponge, which is why I've got like a temperature-controlled sort of cupboard, basically, which I keep all my wood in, because the minute you do take it out, it will just want to, any atmosphere, it'll want to sort of stabilize to whatever atmosphere it's in.
Right. Yeah, when I was at Dragon's Breath Forge, one of the things they would do is they would have a container of some sort, like a giant, this is going to sound silly, but one of those like peanut butter pretzel containers you could get from Costco. They would have one of those giant like rubber containers and they would pull all the wood out of the kiln, slam it into the thing, and then close the lid so that essentially no excess moisture outside of, I guess, what's already in that container is being uptaken by the wood as it continues to cool down, and then go straight and they keep it in that container and keep it closed until they're ready. Oh, and then they filled that container with the stabilizing agent.
I remember. I remember when I visited you over Dragon's Breath. They also use to dry their wood out. They use a little smoky electric beef jerky machine.
Right.
Remember that? Like a big beef jerky fucking oven. That's one thing that was hilarious. But the other thing is I do the same something similar. Is when I'm drying the wood, I'll let it cool in the oven and then I'll go straight into the container for the cactus juice. I also, and then I fill it up. So if it's going to take on the moisture, fucking take on the moisture. Yeah, I'm going to send you some moisture. Yeah. I'm going to give you all the moisture you can handle there, wood.
We've got a title, all the moisture you can handle.
Hey, there, wood, you know. But, you know, it's there's so many different ways to go. One of the things I definitely do, I learned this, not the hard way, but the safest way is if I know how much I have two vacuum chambers. Before I dry all the wood out, I figure out exactly how much wood is going to fit in that container, and I dry that amount of wood up. So, like, before I put it in the oven, because I don't want to just, like, and I said before, I like heat treating drying wood out in the winter because there's no moisture at all, so it's much faster and there's no, like, weirdness. But I'll take all the wood that I'm going to stabilize, and I'll fit it into the empty container. That's the stuff I'll dry. So when it comes out of the oven, it's going straight into the container, and then I'm filling it up with the cactus juice. Mm-hmm. And then that way, I'm not wasting the kiln dried wood.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
And then what the shocking thing is about stabilizing, and I wouldn't. It's amazing if you fill up the cactus juice and then you have it, you know, it's all submerged. I always put a piece of tape on and I mark the level of the cactus juice.
Yeah.
Because if the longer you wait, you'll be shocked at how much, without any suction, how much cactus juice it'll take on without turning the vacuum on.
Yeah.
Shocking. Oh, like if you're just waiting around, you can do it for a couple months. You do it for a couple weeks. You'll see in like 48 hours, just soaking in the cactus juice, how much it'll absorb. It's pretty amazing.
When you
and then it's the, go ahead.
When you put the wood in the container and you submerge it, or you pour whatever you have it right. submerged in the cactus juice. Do you have a weight of some sort that you're using to help keep the wood down?
There's a company called Turntex that makes the containers with the top and the adjustment.
I see.
And then they have these little plastic pieces that are, it's almost like a plastic screen that wedges in to make sure it's held down. But sometimes you never know. So I always put a weight on top of that to make sure.
I just zip tied a bunch of bolts together, and I've got one of those screens as well, and the bolts just sit on top to stop it rising up, basically.
And what's amazing is that there's so many different ways in which to go about the stabilizing thing. One thing I learned from Jonathan Porter, Doghouse Forge, is to put valves on either side of the, like shutoff valves on either side of, so you have your... You have your container, and then you have the top, and then there's a pressure valve. And then you hook your vacuum to the pressure valve. Well, if you just take a little bit of time and put shutoff valves on either side of the pressure valve, then if you have to leave for the night, you charge the vacuum, you shut everything off after it's charged, and then you're just holding it in a state of it's just the vacuum chambers charged. So then the next morning you just plug back in and then you turn it on again and you're not wasting time. Does that make sense?
So Jeff can take his penis pump home, use it, bring it back in the morning.
Oh my gosh. Pull your pud. Oh my god. Yeah, We get it.
I need
20 bricks to get bricked up. I need 20 PSI. 30 PSI really bricks you up. Kidding me? All of a sudden, I'm Hillary, what's the matter? I got a problem here.
There's some cactus juice left on it.
I'm bricked up in this machine here, Hillary. You got to help me out here. What? I'm sitting there with a fucking pump to my fucking penis. Kidding me? How do you explain that to your wife of fucking 25 years? What are you doing? Nothing.
Just stabilizing.
I was just seeing something. What are you talking? I just had to know. I was just experimenting, Gil. I was just experimenting. What are you talking about? For business. For business. Why are you in your underwear in the bathroom? Your dick out. What are you experimenting with your dick?
Oh, God. I love this.
Did you know, it depends where you are in the world as well, how hard that pump will pump.
Oh, I was wondering.
How hard the pump will pump. Yeah, so like the amount of PSI the same pump can pull. Depends on the air pressure where you are as well.
Pull your putt opportunity that you missed.
Is that Shall we move on, or is it geographical location?
I think it's elevation. I think yes, yeah.
I bet there should be like an OnlyFans for like knife makers and like pumps and like just it's all like
nothing.
You're not interested.
The people that are making knives, right?
Oh Jesus!
You're not interested.
That's why they wear skirts.
I don't
some of
see
them.
You with the pump.
I don't want to think about me with the pump. Jesus Christ! You ever see those athletes who put like they have those little like round like bumps on their back from like cupping? You know, cupping
yes.
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's like that for your dick. You have like these little fucking dots from like sticking the never mind. Let's move on.
I can tell everybody about Indasa Rhino Wet. Because if you're using sandpaper, you want to be using the best. Save time, save the effort, save some money. Use Indasa Rhino Wet. And if you head over to texasferrosupply.com, you can get 10% off. Not just your Indasa Rhino Wet, but everything else that they sell there at texasferrosupply.com. So go take a look and use KnifeTalk10 at checkout and get 10% off.
We have an audio message from our man, Justin Modica. You know that guy? J-Mod Knives?
Yeah.
He's the guy who...
Mr. Glory set up, Hole.
Yes. Speaking
Glory
of,
Hole Forge.
Speaking about getting bricked up.
What's up, guys? Justin Modica from Phoenix, Arizona. Just wanted to get on here and ask how everybody's shop smells. I recently insulated my shop, so I'm used to having the doors open and getting good ventilation. But yeah, ever since the doors are now shut for the summertime, it's awfully stinky in there. Just smells kind of like chemicals. I don't know if it's all the crazy stuff we grind or if it's all the knife-making juices just laying around. But yeah. You guys got crazy smelling shops like myself, or is it just me?
Justin Modica is also like we were saying, he put a fucking forge out the outside of his shop that faces in. So
whatever
fucking butt sauce he's cooking up in his shop, it's like butt feet and fucking G10 over there.
Jesus. Yeah, I mean. And basically, every process has a different smell, doesn't it? You know, so whatever you're doing, there's a different smell involved. But yeah, you go from obviously, you know, you grinded steel. There's a smell to that, and when you're doing wood, it's a very different smell. And when you're using chemicals, it changes madly. But maybe you need to think about some sort of air filtration or something. If it's always smelling of chemicals, that maybe isn't so healthy.
Yeah, I would be curious if he has, like, he must have an air evacuation fan near the peak of his shop. I mean, I feel like that would make the most sense because heat's going to rise. But I wonder if he's got louvers on the other side that helps air to just travel across the top of the shop. Ventilating air, especially if you just sprayed insulation and stuff like that, like the volatiles in that, you don't want to be smelling that stuff. You ideally shouldn't be smelling it. The only time my shop smells funny is if I'm farting up a storm or I've eaten or I've cooked up something weird in the shop.
Jesus.
Jeez.
The tone on this week's show is...
You never farted in your shop.
Yeah, it's very base. It's very base.
Yeah, but I feel like the shop shouldn't smell. And if it does, that's usually, for me at least in my shop, something's wrong.
Well, like what would make you think something's wrong? Like, what's the smell? What's the it's something's wrong smell?
The smell of melting plastic.
Is
a signifier of an electrical fire or
burning wood.
You don't want to catch fire. Yeah, burning wood. Sometimes if the grinding shavings, like the dust, will catch fire around the edge of my quench bucket. I'll smell it before I feel any heat or even see it. And it usually doesn't like burn in flames, but I can, it does this like, I don't know, it's just like this red fiery shit across the steel wool hanging on the edge of the bucket.
And if you blow on that stuff, it will flame up quickly too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I bet she does. What?
Yeah. Sorry. Wait, Craig, do you collect that and use it in your outdoor adventures, your bushcraft?
I don't. But I have seen people use that kind of stuff. Yeah. Because it'll hold an ember and when you blow it, it'll spark right back up.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So that's a warning to everybody, actually. When you're grinding, all those little bits of those iron filings, those little bits of like cottony, you know, all gets together and that kind of stuff. Get rid of that, because the spark on that, it'll just stay in there for hours and hours and hours.
I love J-Mod knives. One of the things about J-Mod knives, that besides the fact he's a knife maker, he's like a professional skateboarder.
Mm, yes, yeah.
So what I hung out with a lot of skateboarders, and especially I don't do skateboarding. I used to skateboard vehicle.
You're nearly 60, of course.
Hey,
he's a one wheel boy. So,
hey,
he's not a four wheel boy.
So back in the day, I used to hang out with skateboarders.
And
one of the things I noticed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal coline, or our best-selling clinically-backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator, as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
Was how terrible they all smelled. So, and you guys are laughing.
Jamon himself.
I'm not wrong. Most of these guys, they're skateboarding in their street clothes. And they reek. They smell body odor and just it's terrible and bad breath and cigarettes and all this shit. So I'm assuming J-Mod, who I'm saluting, nothing but respect for my man J-Mod, he's used to the smell of these putrid people, respectfully. And I'm stunned. It makes me wonder how bad his shop actually smells, because he's used to being around people who smell terrible.
Yeah.
So it must be like a real butt factory in there. I will say that the best thing we ever did to cut down a lot of smells was to use a tile saw for G10. That's game changer.
Yeah,
the tile saw
with the water.
There's no dust at all. The water cuts it perfectly. The best cuts we've ever had, and it's like a giant, you can use the blade forever. The blades don't get ruined. But the biggest thing is there's no dust. There's no smell. There's nothing.
That
you don't even smell it.
It's terrible. And micarta. Ugh.
Micarta might be worse than G10.
Micarta is fucking
bad. Micarta is bad. Bone? Ugh.
Oh, jeez.
Or the fucking antler? Oh, my God. It's like a, I mean, I mean, we're talking J-Mod smells over there.
So, listeners, if any of you want to be insulted, just send your questions to us at Knife Talk Podcast.
I love J-Mod. He's my guy.
Yeah,
he's man.
A great dude.
He's the man. He's the man. He knows I'm kidding.
Yeah. Right, where are we? Where are
well,
we?
Well, we have that. We also have listener feedback and whatever else you guys want to do.
Do you want to do the next one, Miracle, about gatekeeping?
This is from Paul Jansen. He is one of our few Gold Star listeners. He says, KTP, here's a comment/question in regards to gatekeeping information. Why is it in the maker world if you aren't willing to freely share everything you know about something you're gatekeeping? In any other industry, if you come up with a way to do something, it's patented, copyrighted, trademarked, etc., and people have to pay up if they want access to it. Yet makers will blast others for not giving away trade secrets for free.
Hmm. It's a good one. That's why he's a GSL.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit in the past. It is strange, I think, because there's a community now of, you know, knife makers. A lot of us know each other. You know, a lot of us for years we've been speaking, that kind of thing. And sometimes it's easy to forget sometimes that it's a business and everybody's doing a business, you know? It's very easy to forget that because, you know, you're sharing stuff with friends and all the rest of it. But, you know, quite often, even I get, you know, messages from strangers, you know, about, you know, still about that, still, right, about that bloody brother printer etching thing, right? And I took that video down about 2 years ago and I still get, I don't know where the questions are coming from now. But, yeah, and it's just like, you know, from complete strangers, they expect you to drop everything and give them a 20-minute intro into this thing that they want to learn when there's probably better resources out there anyway. It really is a strange one. Yeah. What do you think?
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean, I think if you have your own unique approach to something, you've pioneered a new approach or whatever, it's your intellectual property, I don't think you have a responsibility to share it. You don't owe it to anybody to share something. I'm trying to think of an example of gatekeeping in the knife making industry, but honestly, there's already so much information online and in podcasts, especially in our podcast, on forums, on Instagram. People asking questions, often more than anything, feel to me like fucking laziness. And I don't know if the information's out there, they're gatekeeping themselves, honestly, by being fucking lazy and not approaching somebody, rather than approaching somebody and asking for the answer, the easy way. It's like, not everybody's got the time to fucking explain things. And again, I just feel like a lot of the information and the answers that people are looking for or wanting are out there. They just have to do a little legwork. But I think if it's your proprietary process, if it's your intellectual property, you have no responsibility to share anything with anybody. And
well, that's
coming from a guy who shares a lot of shit.
That's not the question of whether you have to or not. It's whether people refer, you know, gatekeeping. We talked about it last week. And I find that the expression to be like this millennial bullshit, that it's like, it's meant to be, you're just like, it's like passive aggressive for not acknowledging the fact that you might be unqualified for something. You say, oh, he's gatekeeping this information, as if, like, gatekeeping, the idea of what gatekeeping is you're preventing someone from access to something. And it's like, we're not in a position to prevent somebody from going into a place or being involved with a thing, or we're not part of a guild or a union where we're not in the position of gatekeeping. So when somebody says, oh, you're being a gatekeeper, because I got that called a lot. And I was just like, well, fuck you. You know what you are? You're unqualified. You know, so how you like them apples? And I got no problem with it. The funny thing is like, once again, a lot of times people getting into knife making are first time small businesses, where they've never understood the ins and outs of real business as opposed to, and they're just like kind of freeballing it, and not only freeballing it, but they're just like assuming everyone's there to be helpful. I got bills to pay too. I don't have time. Well, the guy wants this. He says, hey, I was wondering if you, the guy recently says, I'm wondering if you could do a video process on your thing for me, on your serrated knives. I'm like, dude, I have a fucking business to run. I don't have, and they, a lot of guys in the knife making world, and I'm saluting you all. I'm saying this with peace and love. This is back to Craig saying, you want to fucking get insulted, come over here. There's a lot of you guys think that we're playing, and I take this shit seriously. So, you know, I once in a while I'll get a message from somebody who'll say, you know what, I don't like this person or that person because they won't share my stuff on Instagram. Like, they won't, they're not, you're not being part of a community because you're not sharing your stuff with other, you don't get it because you're not sharing stuff with the world and cross promoting us. And that's like a degree of gatekeeping. Fuck you. This is like, I don't fall for this millennial bullshit, frankly.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like gatekeeping feels very similar to, I feel like older generation would say you have to earn your dues, right?
Which is true.
Before you can. And so I feel, to me, gatekeep, yeah, I guess that's to me what like gatekeeping, at least in this industry, feels like. It's like you got to earn your dues.
Yeah, but people use this expression willy-nilly about everything, and it's just like you want to know the stupidest thing, another millennial expression that these motherfuckers say. Somebody will say something, and then afterwards they'll say, I'm being canceled. That is the legitimately one of the dumbest things I've heard. Somebody wrote to me, he's like, on my post, they said something kind of nasty, and they said, don't cancel me. Fuck you. Nobody knows who you are, number one. And the whole idea of canceling.
Don't flatter yourself.
The other thing about what canceling is years ago, if you didn't like a TV show or a radio show, you could boycott to put pressure onto the management for them to discipline you or fire you, and you were canceled. And then they've come up with this idea, like if you say something wrong and people are mad at you, then you're going to get canceled. Stop it with this millennial bullshit, because it's just like really, really like, don't flatter, just like Mareko said, don't flatter yourself.
Is it
ridiculous?
What group are you referring to?
All right, so like in radio, canceling was big in shock jockery in the early 2000s.
Like Tom Likas?
Well, I don't know. I know who that guy is, but I don't know exactly. But like, you know, perfectly example is Howard Stern. Howard Stern used to say these crazy things, and then these groups would get together, and they would petition by writing letters to the radio station, or they would petition to write letters to the sponsors, and then they would make the sponsors financially pull their sponsorship out, and that was
social
way,
pressure. Yeah,
there was the pressuring the radio station to punish Howard Stern or cancel him. So, like, you hear these guys, like these stupid news guys who say something stupid and then they're fired. They refer to that as being canceled. And it's just like this, it's basically boycotting or making, or, but really the stupid thing is they're not, people refuse to take responsibility for the things that they say. And then they blame society for their hardships as opposed to saying, I should have used my fucking head. You know, it's so idiotic. But I find gatekeeping in that same thing. It's like, don't talk to me like with that shit. I'm against it. And if you want, I'm perfectly happy being a gatekeeper. Go to fucking do your thing.
Yeah. I think when I first started, I was a very good maker right off the bat. When I started my own thing, it's because I already had worked for somebody else for several years before starting my own thing. So I had a decent, a solid background in a lot of hours in doing the work. And I had makers telling me that, you know, you won't be taken seriously by other makers until you've been to, like, you've gone to Blade Show 5 years in a row or whatever number of years in a row. And to me, that felt like you have to earn your dues, which is going to these shows, paying money for travel and food and tables and selling fucking nothing. And you have to eat shit, essentially, for a while before anybody will take you seriously, rather than just being taken seriously because of meritocracy, because of the quality of your work. And that to me felt like gatekeeping in a way.
Yeah, but that's like your peers though, isn't it? That's not the customer. Do you know what I mean? It's again, we're getting to that thing of mixing up what is business and what is you know, being part of a community, I suppose.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the customer, they see the end product. That's all they're interested in, really.
Sure.
But here's the dumbest part of it all for people who are referring to other people as gatekeepers. You just point, if let's say a guy says to you, Mareko, oh, you won't help me out, you're a gatekeeper. That fucking guy is a weak person, because what you should be doing instead of complaining and crying is you should, out of spite, make it happen. Like, that's the craziest part. Like, I remember there was, when I moved to the town that I was in, I wanted to join this artist guild just because I didn't know any other artists and I wanted to be involved in shows. And they were giving me the fucking, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that. I was like, oh, fuck yourself. I'll do it myself. Out of spite. I'm like, I don't need to be tied to these old farts. So I did my own show. And we ended up having one of the most successful art shows that the city actually ended up using in grants, in government grants. So, like, if you blame others by calling them gatekeepers for anything, like even in our conversation when we were talking about art, and you and I were talking, and Mareko, you said, oh, you have to go to school to be an artist. Instead of giving that point, you should just say, fuck you, I'm going to do what I want. And I'm going to be successful, and I'm going to be out of spite. I'm going to spite you. And it's just like, I find it all to be very much along the lines of, and I don't want to say the word, but I'm not going to say, it's like pussy stuff. It's like all these like little expressions of like, he's gatekeeping me, you're not helping me. You shouldn't be bitching. You should be fucking outworking people. That's what you should be doing. Mm. I was all happy. Now I'm mad.
Grr.
What did you do to me, you motherfuckers?
Well, I'll tell you what'll make you happy. Tell me about your fantastic grinder.
Are you kidding me? We've already been using the Broadbeck Ironworks, and you know all about it. And funny enough, I don't know if I told you this, guys, but we are talk about AI. Ben Seacrest was listening to. I was just saying, don't use AI art. Use a real artist. They reached out to me, and they said, oh, we were going to make some new T-shirts for Blade Show, and we know that you're not crazy about AI. Would you be interested in designing some shirts? I was like, fuck yeah. So I designed some shirts I think they're going to have for Blade Show. And you're talking about like community talking to community. This is the way to do it. Broadbeck Ironworks is the best, and their machines are great. The people are amazing. Their attachments are outstanding. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, you can get 10% off everything. But these are real guys trying to build a community, and I'm all in with Broadbeck Ironworks.
Nice. Okay. What should we do? Should we do a couple more questions?
We also have feedback, whatever you want.
Let's do some feedback then and see what we get on.
Guys, listen to me. There's a couple of announcements. Number one, T. Frank Custom Knives has got a hammer in on May 17th, so hurry up. It's thomasfranklinknives@gmail.com. Lynn Ray and a pile of other great guys is going to be in Fort Smith, Arkansas. So go follow TF. I think it's T. Frank Custom Knives. Next is STP Custom Knives. They're doing the Louisiana Custom Knife Show September 13th through 14th in Gonzales, Louisiana. Go to lacustomknives.net and get yourself squared away with that. Can Iron, those knuckleheads, are going to be doing it again on October 7th through the 10th in Austin, Manitoba. Great demonstrators, Pat Quinn, Jake James, Lee Arapach, Noah Vachon, and it's sponsored by one of the sponsors, Maritime Knife Supply. So go to caniron.com for tickets and more information. Okay. Simple Little Knives sent us a feedback. And he says, hey, guys, here's a listener feedback for you and a hot take. If you can't justify your design decisions, you can't call it art. And now he's qualifying it. As a registered architect, the one thing they teach you is design, is you need to understand why you do what you do. To avoid the Magna Carta, ain't no one getting pregnant from, I just thought I looked good. Nice job, Simple Little Knives. So got to be able to talk about it. Now, I'm just giving you a heads up. It's starting to thunderstorm over here, and if I – you can almost hear it. So if I black out, I hope, you know, we're all good. So
okay. Let's just address that then. So if you can't justify your work, it isn't art. And that's what you learned in architect school.
Right. Basically, it's the idea of you should be able to express your
I think if you're an architect, you definitely have to justify your work because, you know, there's safety implications and the rest of it. But I think art and technical drawing is very, very different, if you ask me. I'm not saying it's not art, but I'm just saying that not all art is like that. Or, you know, art can be many forms. And, you know, technical drawing, such as an architect would undertake, is maybe a type of art, but it's certainly not, you know, how all art is.
What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah, I think I would change the word in his question or statement about art and change it to like or essentially say like it's a poor craftsman that can't explain why the decisions he's made around the profile of the blade, the edge profile of the knife, the type of grind, the thickness, and the relationship to the handle, if there's a guard, all these different things that make a particular knife what it is, why you are making those choices, especially in regard to the actual function of the thing. I think that is definitely important. And I think there are definitely, I don't know. I feel even saying like a poor craftsman, because honestly, like I was making great knives before I really fully deeply understood why I was making the decisions that I were able to put words to those decisions. It took me years to really, and I still feel like I'm continuing to deepen my understanding, especially regarding my design choices. But I guess I do believe, though, it is really important to try to understand those as best as possible. Otherwise, you're making decisions, especially in regards to culinary knives. A lot of people are making culinary knives, but they don't know why they're designed this way, why they're ground this way, what these different types of grinds do and affect the way of the performance of the thing as an actual tool. Once you have those things in place regarding the design, that creates a lot more freedom around, the embellishments that you might be playing with in the knife. Because you can make something that, I guess, looks very interesting, but whether or not it performs well as a tool, which we're doing for the most part, we're making tools. I think that should really be kind of like the number one thing we're trying to achieve.
I agree there, because that's a specific thing we're doing. We're making a tool for a purpose. But with regards to, you know, just saying the word art, you know, it's such a broad thing. And even last week we mentioned, you know, is AI art? And I sort of come to that conclusion where for majority of people, no, because we're scratching the surface. But for some people who really do great work and they use AI, I think it is art. So I think art is just being, I wouldn't even say it's mastering what you do, because what my kids do, I'd say that's art, you know, and they're certainly not masters at it, but they're expressing themselves.
This conversation is interesting, and there's a few other people I wish we could have brought into this. I've been talking to Pat Quinn from the Center for Metal Arts for quite a long time. Mm. And he was listening to my talks on in Full Blast on art and what's art and stuff like that. And he was talking to me. He was just like, I'm a professional artist. And he started referring to, a professional artist career as a professional artist should be treated the same as a professional plumber or electrician or anything like that. So he said, when this is your career, you should take it seriously. And he says, because he takes everything very, very seriously. I mean, his craft, he takes it very seriously. And I started to think about, like, maybe that's what I should have said originally, which is, like, if you're a professional artist, there are certain things
different.
I think that if you're just, like, you're making paintings and it is art, and you don't really have to say anything. But when you're a professional artist, where you're really serious about as a fine artist or something like that, It is important to be able to articulate what you're doing. It is important to be able to say, hey, Mareko, tell me about your design decisions. And then you're able to articulate it no matter how simplified it is. Doesn't have to. I was making a joke this saying that like everyone seems to think you got to like put a fucking top hat on a tuxedo when you're writing your when you're writing your, you know, your artist manifesto. You don't. You just have to have a little bit. I like that. I do this because I'm looking at these, and these. The first day of art school, when they're doing critique, the first thing they say is the one thing we don't want to hear is I did it because it's cool. I did it because I think it's cool is unacceptable as a professional artist to describe why you're doing something. You have to be able to articulate yourself to a certain degree.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise,
and I think
you
don't... professional artist or you know, professionally trained artists, they're just branches of different art. That's the way I'd look at it, you know?
Definitely.
So rules, different rules apply.
Nice job, Simple Little Knives.
Restoking those fires.
Let's go. Well, let's go back to questions. I think that's. There's another thing about. There was from Paul Jansen wrote about. Some guy a couple weeks ago was talking about how do you heat treat in a coal forge, and he says hold the knife spine down, just touching the coals, starting in the widest part of the part, working towards the thinnest part, chase the color you're wanting towards the tip. Moving the blade constantly, it takes a while, but it'll keep you from burning up your blade.
Okay, let's do some questions. Mareko, can you tell us about Damasteel?
Damasteel, however you want to
damn say it. Steel.
God damn, they're good. They make some of the highest performing, cleanest, powdered metallurgical stainless Damascus steel available in the world. We love these guys. They've been a great sponsor for us. We've all had great opportunities to spend time with them and see them. Well, actually, I don't know if Craig's had a chance to hang out with them. Anybody?
No.
Hopefully sooner than later, but they're really great. And I love the material. Whenever I need to do a stainless knife, I'm always using, Damasteel.
Damasteel. I know. I'm just saying it like those guys do.
Damasteel, yes.
Damasteel.
And so, yeah. So if you go to damasteel.ab and get a hold of whatever you need to get from them for your projects, make sure you put in, I believe it's Knife Talk 10 at checkout. Go and register and create an account and go get what you need. And then you can also go to our friend Lawrence Lake's business, Maritime Knife Supply, where you can get the Damasteel build-along material. I don't remember all the information about the Damasteel material, but Lawrence Lake is the guy to get it from.
Yeah, it's all on the website, Maritime. On Damasteel AB. They've got special tabs for the build-along and for the DCI, which is the Damasteel Chef Invitational. It's all there with links to Maritime Knife Supply to buy the steel and so on. Yeah, it's all
excellent.
There.
Excellent. Yeah, so damasteel.ab. And use Knife Talk 10 at checkout.
Yeah, damasteel.se is the website.
Oh, sorry, S-E. My bad.
And damasteel.ab is their Instagram. Okay, let's do some questions then. Where are we? Let's have a look. 66 Mountain Knives says, I got a phone call from an art gallery cowboy store in Wyoming that wants some of my knives for their display and to sell. Their catch is that they want $150 a month for the display space and additionally take a 25% commission on everything sold. Is that normal in the art world, and would it be worth the price of admission? And that's Dan Hubbs of 66 Mountain Knives.
Dan Hubbs is a great guy, and I believe 6'6 refers to his height. He's a giant. He's a
really
nice guy. Yeah, he's 6'6".
6'6", wow.
I would feel not very good about this, I feel like. And if you need extra exposure, maybe this is worth the price of admission, at least to start. Mm. But like, what are they promising on their end? Are they?
Yeah.
Cause especially the whole 25% commission is like, especially if you're already paying for space, what are they doing other than ringing the person up? Like, are you going, like, are they creating an opportunity for you, for people to meet you as the maker? What meaningful information are they going to be able to share about your work versus other work that might potentially be in the store? If they're not really doing any salesmanship, why the fuck do they get 25%?
Do you want me to tell you?
Well, I think the commit the 25% commission, I mean, if anything's placed in a retail store, I mean...
Sure, I mean, I guess...
They'll generally take at least 25%. I mean, normal retail for, you know, other items is sometimes 50% or more.
Sure.
But the fact that they want to charge for the space as well, which is almost like the merchandise, and they want to charge for that as well, and that's what they should be bringing to the party, surely.
You motherfuckers never listen to me. I mean, I've been saying this forever. These people are pimps. They're pimps. You're paying for protection. That's what you're paying. All these gallerists are fucking pimps. And you'll probably go around and you'll say this is standard operating procedure. I have never heard of in a gallery there being a monthly fucking paying rent. But I'm not surprised because I think that art business is not as easy as it was, especially I had a gallery in Wyoming. This is back in 1997, and they were selling the shit out of my giant lures because, you know, you're in Jackson, Wyoming. It's like fishing capital of whatever. So, but no one ever dared ask me for rent. I mean, if they would have asked you for rent, I would say, forget it. But I was selling enough work that it was just like they were thrilled. Every time they'd sell something, I'd send them something back. Yeah. But all these galleries, they do it because they can. The whole idea behind what a gallery is they know that you as an artist or an artist sucks at business. That's the reason why we get all these dumb questions on this podcast, respectfully. I'm saying respectfully.
Respectfully.
Respectfully. But seriously, the idea, I was told when I was younger, artists are supposed to create, they're not supposed to be good at business. That is the pimp mentality. And what happens is some people just, it's the name of the game. It's the cost of doing business. If you can afford to do it, in regards to what Mareko says, is there going to be any, what they're going to offer you? They're going to offer you squat. And if you ask, what they're going to be like is, what are you talking about? The last gallery opportunity I had, was a very well-known gallery. I knew and known the gallerist for a long time. She came to my shop. We went to my shop. We talked about my work. We talked about my direction. It was a whole big production, and I showed her images and I showed her work, and we had a big thing. She offered me a solo show, which would have been a big deal for me in this place, and would have been a big deal. And then she came up with the arrangement. The arrangement is the gallery will be open on weekends for 8 weeks, and I'm expected to man the gallery for those days that it's open. Wow. And they're getting 30%. And after I put together this whole portfolio and I put together this idea and I figured out what I was going to do, and she dropped this shit on me, I said, that was the last time I really made a lot of art. And I said, I appreciate your help. I'm going to go make knives instead. And that was like the fucking cherry on top. I'd already been making knives, and I was just like, why the fuck would I go? And not to mention, I'm in charge of bringing people in with, well, at the time, the Instagram followers they had. I'm in charge of doing the promotion, and I have to work the fucking register and open the fucking, sweep the fucking place, and I have to give them 30%. Pimp relationship. Pimp relationship.
Yeah, I feel like, so... At least for me, the retailers I've worked with in the past, that 25% commission in the question here would actually be treated more like a wholesaler's discount. Because honestly, yeah. I guarantee at this whatever cowboy store, they're not doing that with all these other products that they sell, whatever the products are. And what they're doing is they're buying bulk or product by volume at a discount, and then they're marking it up and they're selling it. There's no reason for them not to do that same thing from you.
So I guarantee you it's on consignment. Guarantee it.
Or it could be consignment. But that makes sense for the 25%. But I would try to, if you can, try selling maybe just a couple pieces to them. But that makes big, and the reason I say that, and offer a retailer discount or a wholesale discount. But that puts the onus on them to fucking move it and sell it. Otherwise, they could have it in their store. It looks cool. But they're not making any effort to try to really push it very hard. And I don't feel versus them already having kind of invested in that those knives by paying that retail price. And a lot of the knife retailers I'm aware of will buy work outright from the maker at, with a slight discount, or basically a wholesaler's discount or a retailer's discount. But then the responsibility now is on that store. It's no longer on you to sell them. Otherwise, they could have those knives just sitting in there floating for however fucking long, and they're getting $150 a month for from you for what? Maybe a 12-inch by 12-inch or even 24 by 12-inch shelf in a display case? Like, what the fuck?
Most likely, if it's an art gallery, most likely that they're not buying it. I've never heard of an art gallery buying the work and at a discount. It's all on it's all on consignment. Because why would you lay the work out if it's not working? What do? Get your money back if you decide to change the show? You know, it's just like all consignment. I hate consignment. I hate consignment. I lost knives at this last goddamn place I did a consignment. I won't do it anymore because they went out of business. The husband and wife divorced. They closed the shop in the middle of the night and everybody left. They have sculpture and knives of mine. Fuck that. No. Yeah. You want? I would love it if some. No one's outlaying stuff like that. Or that I know of. I've never even heard of such a thing.
I would avoid consignment as much as you possibly can,
unless you're cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Yeah, but I'm sure this isn't the only store that would be excited to have your work in their store.
Yeah. But the pros.
Hey, I'd be excited if you could give me $150 a month and I'll do fuck all for it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Well, now wait a second. Let's talk about the pros of it. What happens if it is let's just say it's Wyoming. Let's just say it's in a very tawny area where there's a lot of rich people walking around. They're going into galleries and they're buying art. And people maybe it is a very prestigious place to have your stuff. And maybe there are people who come in and buy that stuff. If it's not all your work, and you're not depending on it, maybe it is good free ad. Maybe it is good advertisement.
Sure.
Maybe if you sell a few things, maybe you say to them, "Look, let's work. P.S. There's this word called negotiation too. We used to refer this as fuck you time. That was old school. We call fuck you time where we make it very, very like, let's say you sell a few knives and you say, "Hey, listen, I have a great idea. I'll keep helping sell these knives, but you gotta cut it out with the rent. You know, let's negotiate." Yeah. You can negotiate with people. You can't say no. There's no laws.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think you do make a good point. Like, if you're in the position, if you're not relying necessarily on all the money coming in from these knives to pay your rent or cover your bills or whatever, if you can afford to do it, then sure, maybe it does make sense. But I would put a timeline on it and to see what kind of result. Like, what kind of timeline would you give it? 6 months? See, because I feel like if nothing's moving in 6 months, like, why are you paying 6 months worth of rent? That's almost $1,000 worth of fucking rent on knives that are just sitting in a display case.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's a pimp relationship. It always will be. It always is. And a lot of these guys are preying on artists because artists are suck at night at a business.
Well, and that's why I think it's more ideal to work with somebody who will buy the work from you at a retail or at a wholesale price, because then the onus is on them to sell it, and it's no longer your responsibility. You've gotten paid, but it's more of like a business relationship where essentially you're making and they're selling. Like, you have a business partner. So in that kind of retailer situation where they are buying it from you at a discount, you have more of a business relationship, business partnership, than doing consignment or doing this shit where it's just sitting on a shelf in a shop. I think if you can, that is a better, situation to be in than this art gallery.
There's negotiations on all this stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And funny enough is we were once approached to do something, and my business partner was approached, and we had a long conversation, and they wanted him to sign an NDA. And you know what he said? He said, "I'm not signing shit." And that was the end of it. You don't have to do what you don't. You know, sometimes things don't work out. He's like, "I'll help you. I'm not signing anything. You can go kick rocks." I'm signing your NDA just because you say I got to sign my NDA. I'm not. you want to work with us? So, you know, I'm not signing that. So there's opportunities too. I mean, you know, you could negotiate with them.
Yeah.
Don't say completely no, but at the same time, never forget, don't be on them streets, my girl. Don't be on them streets. Don't, you got to work on them streets. You got to protect yourself. You got to protect yourself. Don't be on them streets by yourself.
Those pimps will look out for you. Okay.
They will.
Okay. Right. Let me tell everybody about Even Heat. We all need kilns, don't we? If we're going to do any sort of heat treat. So why bother with anything else other than an Even Heat? There's just no point. Head on over to evenheat-kiln.com and see the range they've got. They've got all different sizes. They've even got like a temper oven now, which is really cool. You can stack it on top. It looks super cool. Yeah, head on over. evenheat-kiln.com. Let's have a look. If you two can go down the list and maybe pick a question each, and I'll take the next one in line from Jordan Fry. He says, hello, gentlemen. When cleaning up our blade after heat treat, how do you know when all the I think that's meant to say decarb, is ground off? I can only do stock removal, so I know there can't be too much. I've been having trouble with uneven acid etching when stone washing.
Mm.
Mareko.
Yeah, in my experience, the only way to really check is to do just like a quick dip in some ferric. So do a bit of grinding and then dip it in ferric. And
works for me every time.
Well, yeah, do a bit of grinding, dip it in ferric, and that ferric will reveal where there's decarb still on the blade. And if you see that there's still decarb, then go back and work on those areas and grind it out. I try to account for probably 20 thousandths at the most for decarb, but that's on forged pieces. If you're just doing stock removal, there shouldn't be a ton of decarb. There's definitely going to be decarb, especially if it's in an open-air atmosphere. But it shouldn't be that crazy. You should be able to grind through it. But if you're worried about it, just doing a dip in ferric, that'll show you where there are uneven spots. Clean and then, you know, neutralize it, go grind some more, and just kind of keep jumping back and forth. My water buckets underneath my grinder are actually baking soda water, there's baking soda in that bucket, and it just helps to reduce the how quickly a blade might flash rust while I'm grinding the knife and I'm constantly dipping the knife in the bucket. So if I'm trying to figure that out, if I have any decarb, I'll keep my the acid near my grinder, and I'll just check it every once in a while. So I'm not walking back and forth around the shop all over the fucking place. You will want to either wipe the blade off or rinse the blade off with fresh water, because you don't want to go back and forth between the neutralizer and the acid directly. But that's the best way to try to see if you've got decarb or not, is just to check it every once in a while as you're grinding.
I didn't know that about baking soda and sort of stopping flash rust happening.
Yeah, I can grind a blade, dip it in the baking soda. I mean, if you leave it there for fucking ever, then sure, it'll start to develop rust. Yeah. But I can leave a knife for like half an hour, and there won't be a bunch of rust on it. Versus if there's nothing in the water, if it's just straight water, it'll start flash rusting in about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Jeff, have you got a question?
No, I don't have a question.
Okay, well, tell everybody about your Tormek then.
Oh, I'm going to go. I just on the phone with my man Carl Friends from Tormek yesterday after the Knicks won. I love this. These guys have turned into friends. I love the Tormek because it is a very, very easy to use, water cooled sharpening system. If you're a knife maker, they're great. If you're just a knife sharpener, they're great. Axes, chisels, whatever you got, it's very intuitive. You can also use jigs, you don't have to use jigs. It's a great company, and it's amazing. And I'm a huge fan of Tormek. Go to Tormek.com or Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. And when you are at Blade Show, go visit the Tormek guys. Go say hi to Carl. Go say hi to Sebastian. And I'm a big fan. Carl might be there too. I've gotten into friendly with all these guys. So definitely check out the Tormek and see what the fuss is about. So here we are. You both fucking were muted. I was just like, all of a sudden,
you didn't know what to do then, did you?
I'm used to it, but I looked down and I'm just like, it's just me here.
Sorry. I had to plug in my computer because the battery is about to die. I did not want that.
Well, let's. We haven't had an after show in a while. It's four.
Exactly.
Hours.
Maybe that's a sign. Okay.
I watched Baby Girl.
Oh, what did you think?
It was interesting.
What's Baby Girl?
That Nicole Kidman film I was telling you about that I went to the cinema to see with three other dirty old men.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that's the situation.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because it starts quite graphic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it ends quite graphic as well.
Yeah, I can't remember the end.
Nicole Kidman looks like a washed-out corpse.
Listen.
Sorry.
I'm into it.
My bad. I apologize.
That's
respectfully.
Not very kind.
Respectfully. Respectfully.
The industry is rough on women, especially as they age. That's not fair.
I apologize to all women listening to this podcast and women in general.
Best to her. But yeah, I don't mean the movie.
You think she's listening to this thing?
Nicole Kidman
no,
isn't.
But we do have women
sorry,
that
Nicole.
Actually do listen to our fucking podcast.
We have who?
We have women that listen to our podcast.
I was just joking.
I'm just saying. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I thought it was good. I probably wouldn't watch it again.
No.
But I thought it was an interesting movie. The dynamic between the what is it? In the description, in the synopsis before I watched the movie, it was like basically a powerful female CEO gets into a torrid affair with her.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called, the guy, like the coffee running motherfucker.
But he's got the power, hasn't he? It's a weird sort of dynamic.
Oh,
it's,
don't give that away. Jeez.
Oh, okay.
But anyways,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, it was interesting.
Hmm. I haven't seen anything this time. Normally when I come over, I make a beeline to go to the cinema to see something, but I've been a bit busy. I haven't really seen anything this time. Haven't seen much TV. I'm reading a great book. Steve Jones, who's in the Sex Pistols, it's his autobiography, and there's just some classic lines in there. It's just brilliant. Really good. So that's what I'm reading at the moment. But, other than that, it's just been sort of busy rehearsing. No. You watching anything, Jeff? Reading anything?
I'm locked special? Into sports. I'm having such a good time watching. We went to a Yankee game last week and we had such a good time. And then it's been, if it's not baseball, it's been basketball. And I've been really, really enjoying. I have friendships from high school and we text during the games and it's so much fun. I have a college friend I text with, and it's like become this really kind of a neat different way to watch a game, which is with friends of mine from all across the country, which has been a lot of fun. Really, really cool. Yeah.
Bringing people together through sports.
Yeah. But I don't really have any. Sometimes I'll watch some show. I got to catch up on Last of Us, but other than that, yeah, I think tonight might be catching up on Last of Us.
Yeah, I went to go and watch season. That.
You what?
I just started the second season.
Yeah, I went to try and find it to watch it the other day, but I couldn't find it on any of the networks.
It's on Max.
It's a massive thing. We don't get Max here, but it's a massive show over here as well. But I don't know where people are watching it, so I'll have to look it up. But yeah, no, people love it. People who are into it have been loving it, haven't they?
They're probably watching it through VPNs.
Quite possibly, yeah. No, I'm pretty sure it's on one of the streamers right here. I just don't know which one.
Sure.
I didn't really spend too much time looking. So should we call it a day?
Let's go.
Thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate you listening, and we really appreciate you joining in, sending in questions. As Jeff said, questions that sort of get us almost off track a little as well, they're always interesting. So if you've got any burning questions, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And we shall speak to you again next Monday. Bye for now.
Are you looking for legit ways to make extra money? Our friends at The Side Hustle Show have put together this cool free 60-second quiz to help you do just that. All you got to do is go to hustle.show. You can do it right from your phone. Answer a few short multiple choice questions, and it'll recommend a few episodes of the hit Side Hustle Show podcast to start with. You can add your personalized Side Hustle Show playlist to your device, learn what works, and start making more money today. Again, that's at hustle.show or follow the award-winning Side Hustle Show in your favorite podcast app.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.